My name is Alyssa Kirchhoff, and today I am guest hosting Kansas Farm Bureau's podcast, Inside Ag. I am joined by rural sociologists, Dr. Florence Bicot and Shoshana Inwood. Dr. Bicot is an associate research scientist with the National Farm Medicine Center, and Dr. Inwood is an associate professor at The Ohio State University. Drs. Bicot and Inwood have joined forces to co-investigate a CDC project linking rural childcare to farm safety. I have invited Dr. Bicot and Dr. Inwood to share with our listeners some of their insights into what childcare looks like for farm families and how that may impact both farm economics and farm safety. So we're just going to jump right into the material today in the essence of time, but I'd like to spend the majority of this time discussing your most current CDC-funded collaboration entitled Linking Childcare to Farm Children's Safety. Can you both kind of spend some time telling me about how this project transpired and then what your hypotheses and thoughts were at its onset?
I can start, and then Trisha, if you want to go. So I guess this project was proposed based on an invitation to submit a project on doing research to support the safety of farm children. And at the time I was finishing my PhD working with Shoshana, and from doing my research, I knew that, and from Shoshana's research on childcare, I knew that it was a topic that had not been studied a whole lot in agriculture, childcare. And when we look at farm safety, I also knew that it hasn't been talked a whole lot about the kinds of decisions that farm parents are making around childcare as it pertains to keeping the children safe. So the project was actually proposed before COVID-19 started. And so we had no way of knowing that COVID-19 would also have major impacts on childcare in the US. But Shoshana, I'll let you talk about the research that you had been doing on childcare before that.
Yeah, thanks, Florence. So, been actually looking at this issue for almost over a decade, and it was actually really inspired by my own experiences with childcare. So I used to, I was one of those beginning farmers in rural Ohio trying to figure out how to make a living on the land, and eventually went to graduate school and stopped farming. But as I started to have my own children and continued to stay in touch with my friends who had children and were still farming and hearing about their experiences with childcare, was really struck by how this is an issue that we don't often talk about. We actually hardly ever talk about it. Oftentimes, childcare and also health insurance are the elephants in the room that are really affecting farm viability. And so the first step was really to understand, like, how much of an issue is this? How prevalent of an issue is childcare as a problem among farm families? And so the first step was to just start doing some national research asking, is this a problem? And lo and behold, not surprisingly, women said yes, and farm families said yes, it is a problem for both men and women, multi-generational and first generation farm families all see this as a problem. And so what's been great is, as Florence has been at the National Farm Medicine Center, we've really been able to expand this study to look much more broadly and in different ways, looking at both the farm safety angle and also how access to affordable quality childcare affects farm economic development and quality of life.
So as a Farm Bureau member, we received, I think, the second part of your study, the survey that you did, a national survey. And just clicking on the link and reading through the questions, it was not something I had thought of as an issue before, which I should have, because as a parent to young children, childcare is probably our number one stressor, and especially on the farm. And to see it formally studied, I was so intrigued. And I think this is such great work, and I can't wait to see where it goes. So, and I might have the timeline a little off, but so as part of this five-year project, you first started with discussion groups and a photo voice activity with women raising children in three states. So you included Ohio, Vermont, and Wisconsin in that project. Can you talk about why you selected those states to start with and what benchmarks you hope to identify there?
So the choice was made both out of practicality and also out of wanting to understand how the larger environment in which people live might make a difference. So we chose Wisconsin and Ohio because Shoshana is in Ohio and I'm in Wisconsin. And there's the practicality of living in a state, understanding that state, knowing what's happening, and also having connections to the farm sector in the states. And so it's that importance of the buy-in, and it's the importance of different organizations seeing the value in doing that research. And then Vermont was added for two reasons. We both used to live in Vermont. That's where we met actually over 10 years ago. But we also knew that Vermont as a state has taken several measures in recent years to try to improve childcare access and make it cheaper. And so what we wanted to do by adding Vermont was see what happens to farm families if they live in a state that has taken measures to try to support access to childcare.
And if I could just build on that a little bit. So Alyssa, I just want to thank you for just letting us know that that research is meaningful. I think for us as researchers within the land grant university system, Florence and I are both rural sociologists. You know, we know that our research is funded by tax dollars. So it's really important that we're doing research that benefits farmers and America. And so I think one of the things that's also been really striking when we did this call for participants, particularly for the qualitative component, was we were hoping for 36 women in the three states of Ohio, Wisconsin, and Vermont. And we gave ourselves 5 weeks to recruit. And in 5 days, we had 106 women respond. And we actually had to close down registration. And we did 13. I was 108. Yep. And we did 13 focus groups. And I think, you know, one of the things that has also been so important to us, as we're going to talk about today, is to really share those results, because we really believe that research shouldn't just sit on a library shelf, but should reflect the issues that participants are sharing with us, and how can we best share that back with decision makers and back to the stakeholders who so generously shared their experiences with us. So thank you for also having us on today.
Well, yeah, of course, thank you, Alyssa. And I want to Dr. Bicut, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say thank you. And I was going to say, in our three states, we reached out to Farm Bureau, and they really helped us put the word out there. They shared the survey, you know, the link to participate in the qualitative. When it was time for the survey, same thing. Farm Bureau across the country shared the survey, information.
It was so cool to just see something so applicable and research-based come through that line. I do want to back up for a second, because I don't think I gave your project justice. So I was not familiar with the photo voice model prior to reading your ethics study. And I think this really speaks to how much you cared about the project and how you wanted to connect with these women. So can you guys explain a little bit to our listeners what a photo voice project is and what that looks like?
Shoshana, you go, because you're the one, that was your idea to do photo voice. And I remember at the time being like, no, I don't want to do this.
Yep. And now you're a convert. So photo voice is a really great method for enabling participants to become researchers as part of the process. And so what we did was we gave the women who participated prompts and asked them to take pictures of their lived experiences. Just, you know, what does childcare look like for you? What does your village look like? What are the joys on the farm and what are the challenges? And then what we did is we came back together as a group, and the women shared these pictures and debriefed and explained what they meant to them. And so it was a really great way to really understand the lived experience in a visual capacity, right? And then the other part of that is for the women to really, or any participant to really complete this project, is for them to help curate an exhibit. And we're really excited. We just got some internal funding from Ohio State to help fund exhibitions of these pictures that the women are going to curate in the three different states. So, and there'll also be an online digital component as well. So that will really enable them to choose which photos and which quotes that they would really like to share and the messages that they would like folks to understand about their realities and what's to be done about it.
Thank you for sharing that. I can't wait to see that, because I can imagine what it looks like in my head and what women would share. And I'm excited to see that in fruition.
We had over 300 pictures they sent us, and it was very varied. We had someone who sent a picture of themselves in their nurse attire during COVID, totally covered, being like, this is my day job. And then we had people with the kids on the farm doing lots of different things, playing or participating in tasks, pictures of pets, pictures of big goods as this is how I relax, pictures of the entire family. I mean, it was very varied. It was really exciting how much they were willing to share.
And I think the other part is that they were also willing to be vulnerable, right? There were pictures that women sent in with their hands covering their faces of how tired and stressed they were. And women, like, you know, being exhausted, folded over their planners and being like, oh my gosh, this is all the scheduling that I have to do during the week. And we were also really able to see the diversity of families that are within farming within America. So we saw, you know, families with children who have different types of disabilities, right? Whether they're mental or, social behavioral or physical. We saw families who have adopted kids, who are fostering kids, right, who are single parents. So I think it was a really great way to also kind of help us understand all the different types of families that are there. And I think just one of the other things that is we were really surprised by was just how many women were vocal about either themselves or somebody that they know having postpartum depression, right? Because that's another component that we talk a lot about in agriculture is mental health. But oftentimes, these women say it's about the man and it's about the producer and it's about the weather. And then there's all these other things that are also going on within the family that they really wanted us to know and to talk about.
Reading your paper, you mentioned that a woman took a photo of her messy kitchen. And as that being a stressor, that she has these childcare burdens and she has these farm burdens, and that's what falls to the wayside. Because that is, like, that's real life. So the intimacy of this just really struck me. When you took that to the national level, so the next step was you sent a survey in winter and spring of 22, or was it winter of 22 and spring of 23?
So the photo voice and the discussion groups were last year, 2022, winter 2022. Okay. And then the survey was this year, winter, spring 2023. So it's fresh, okay. Like it's, right off the press.
Brand new data. So with that national survey, if you've had a chance to kind of dive into that data, What are you finding nationally? What are parents and families thinking?
Yeah, so the first thing I think that we should say is when we proposed the project, we were going to do the survey only in the three states. But because we saw such a strong response from farmers, but also from farm organizations, we were hearing, I had never been thanked so much for doing research. People are saying, thank you so much for paying attention to this topic, seeing how quickly people had signed up for the qualitative, to participate in the discussion groups. What we decided to do is let's go national, because we also know that those at the same times that we're doing this project, right, they are national policy discussions around childcare for the whole country, right? And so we're like, well let's take it national so that we can understand differences in different parts of the countries as there are different types of agriculture, right? And so for that one, what we did is we used a similar approach. We reached out to over 900 different farm organizations, farm groups, extension services, state agencies of ag, asking, would you be willing to share the information about the survey, which I mentioned Farm Bureau was sensational in sharing it in different parts of the country. And that we received 860 responses that were complete, where they gave us enough information to be able to do the analysis throughout. I think what comes up out of the national survey is a lot of similarities with the three states where we started. We didn't see like, oh man, we found this in the three states, but this is not happening. So for example, we equally found high level of childcare challenges, where about 75% of the people who responded say that they experienced childcare challenges, and those are connected to cost, availability, distance, quality, and whether the value of the family matches the value of the provider. We talked about people, we heard about people, over three quarters said that to help with taking care of the children, they have made adjustments to their off-farm jobs, to how much they work on the farm. And so that has consequences on, on the household budgets and on the development of the farm business. The other part too that we heard a lot about is stress and anxiety. So when we did the focus groups, it was, Shoshana said we did 13. Almost every group, we had someone who shared the experience depression. And that level, or postpartum depression, prepartum depression, other kinds of depression. And that level of vulnerability was, I think in some ways, unexpected, right, Shoshana? When we asked in the survey, has anyone in your household suffered from pre or postpartum depression? It was 47% said that yes, so about half. And then the other thing too is that 8 in 10 farm families reported that someone in their household has felt more stress and anxiety since the arrival of the children. And so it really, people were vulnerable and sharing about some of the, you know, really wanting to have the children on the farm, the importance of, you know, children learning about what it's like to be farming, what learning skills. But at the same time, as they were that rosy picture of we want to do it any other way. But man, it's hard. And it's hard for these reasons.
I can echo all of that sentiment as a farm mom and farm wife. It's a rural childcare, and it's just hard. Dr. Inwood, did you have other things to add?
You know, I think Florence gave a great overview of the big highlights. And I think, you know, one of the things that as we put all the qualitative and quantitative data together, you know, I think one of the things that we're really able to see is that, you know, farms, of course, are really great and wonderful places to grow up. But there's also oftentimes this, you know, sense, I think, in the larger American imagination that there's this multi-generation farm family where there are grandparents that are there to provide childcare, or what only one person, you know, what there's like a one male, you know, oftentimes it's the farmer who's the man. And really what we're seeing is actually the story is much more complicated, and it's always actually been much more complicated. We can go back into the literature into the 1980s and women were asking for help with childcare. And so what we see is that, you know, parents were really vocal in saying that, you know, either I don't trust my the grandparents to be around the kids, or they live too far away, particularly for first generation farmers who are out there moving to where there's good soil and, you know, maybe good market opportunities, but they don't necessarily have any community connections. And I think what this is also really important for is, you know, as, you know, the United States confronts this issue of who's going to be the next generation of farmers, where less than 2% of our population is farming, we focused a lot on how access to land, capital, credit, and farming skills are really important, but we really have to start addressing these deeper social and household issues that Florence just, you know, shared with what people are feeling, because this is actually the true foundation by which our farming system is built on. And so if we don't really address this, we're actually increasing the vulnerability and risk to our food and agricultural systems.
So I kind of want to pivot from that to talk about safety. So you mentioned that most farm children injuries occur in the Midwest, so where your study area focused. And furthermore, the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety reported that about 33 US children are seriously injured in a farm accident each day, and a child dies from a farm accident every 3 days. So supervision or lack thereof and young children greatly attributes to these statistics. So for me, those were just absolutely harrowing numbers. Can you talk a little bit about what your research has found about how childcare directly impacts farm child safety?
That's a great question, Alicia. And the other part too about the statistics that make them more harrowing is that the group of children that is most impacted by those is the what we call the non-standing, the youngest children there, the kind of the toddlers. They're just too young. They're not very independent, right? And that, you know, if you lose your eye from them for a couple of minutes, they might get their hand in something that they shouldn't. What we heard, I think what was very telling is the level of worries that parents have around the children getting hurt. So at the same time that they're busy, you know, juggling where are the kids going to be, who's going to look after them, there was also the real sense of, I don't always have the choice but to bring the kids around. And that gives me a great sense of anxiety, a great sense of stress. So it was almost like another layer that, you know, that as parents, they're, you know, constantly worried about, are they going to get hit by a tractor? Is the milk truck driver, that came up quite a bit, is the milk truck driver going to see the kids? Because they would say, we might know where the kids are, but when someone from the outside of the farm comes in, they might not know that kids are around. And so they talked about different strategies that they would use to try to have the kids, in particular, when it was time for the most dangerous tasks. So heavy tractor, or they have to work around heavy tractor work, or they have to work around manure pits, where they try to find a way to, let's have the kids like napping or with someone else. The use of strollers a whole lot, where they put, you know, kids in the strollers for while they're doing the work done. Another thing that we saw a lot and that we know directly contradicts a lot of the farm safety recommendations, but really points to the fact that sometimes people make decisions or do something because they don't have alternatives, was having kids in the tractor. And so what farm safety, in farm safety, right, we talk a lot about, you know, there's the vibration of the tractor. What about if the door opens and the child falls, right? And the recommendation has been like, don't have the kids on the tractor. What was really interesting for us to hear from farm women and dad is they will say, we know it's dangerous, but if they are in the cab with us, in the enclosed cab on the buddy seat, they're right there next to me, I see them. Versus if they're not in the tractor, they might run around, I'm not going to see them. And to me, that's much more worrying. So it was kind of like this constant trade-off of what do I do to make sure that the kids are around. And to give you, you know, we asked about, it was 9 in 10 farm families said that they were worried at some point that the kids could get hurt. And speaking to the importance of childcare, it was, I think, over 80% that said that the children are in the farm work site at some point because there is lack of childcare, lack of alternative options. And that can be paid or unpaid, right? That can be with grandma, that can be with an older sibling.
And I think just to also add on to that, I think what was also really interesting was to hear from farm parents also about how much that they use screens, right? Like how important, like whether the tablet is, right? Because it was a way to occupy the child, keep them safe and give them something to do. So I think that that's part of this kind of this myth busting that we're also trying to, you know, help elevate. And that was really interesting too, when farm parents talked about why they send their kids to childcare, to daycare centers, was actually for socialization, because they were worried that the kids were not getting enough socialization and were very isolated on the farm, which is also just another part of the story we have not really talked about very much in how farm families operate in modern day.
It seems like cultural norms in our rural areas promote working alongside your kids. So like you said, it's romanticized, kids ride in jump seats, they're shoot side, and that's not always safe. But in reality, that is reality. Like that's just where they have to be. So how do you think some of these ideations that working alongside of young children in dangerous work sites came to be? And then as we know more, why have they stayed?
I can think of another colleague who would be perfect to talk about this. He's the director of my center, Casper Bendixson. He spends a lot of time looking at what are the cultural norms around raising children, and why do they stay, and what are the interactions between, you know, how do farm parents make decisions connected to that? And it's not just something that we have specifically sought out to study, right? But I think some of the nuggets that we are finding is that there hasn't been a whole lot of pushback on that picture of what it means to be a farm parent raising children on farm. So another thing that we did as part of the study, which was before we talked to farm parents, is we did interviews with folks who work in the agricultural sector in a range of capacity, but more think of it in terms of like farm service providers. So we talked to folks who work for farm organizations, agency of agriculture, extension, and we asked them, how do you incorporate children and childcare in your day-to-day programming? And we also looked online. We did online searches to see what is being done. And it was really interesting, right? Because our children are quintessential to family farms, right? It is, you know, the traditions of like you raise the children and then they take over on the farm at some point. But what we found is that they weren't talking about children or childcare. They weren't kind of providing practical solutions of what people could do for the most part. And so in some ways, that really made us wonder about, is the way that we talk about children and raising children as being along with a parent, not making space for other ways of raising kids? And we actually heard it from some farm women. We heard several of them, both in the discussion groups and on the survey, saying, why is it that in any industry but agriculture, we are expected to have the kids with us? And there was really this pushback of, we are working professionals and we love our children, but we do a very dangerous job and we want to be the best that we can be at our jobs. Why is there this social expectation that the children are going to be with us? And they talk about how they hear from other people saying, oh, isn't that nice? You have the children with you. And so there was a sense that they couldn't say, actually, I would rather they would be around because it's going to make them sound like bad mothers. But if you're a teacher, if you're a nurse, if you work in, you know, at the seed dealer, you don't have your kids around for the most part. They might be here once in a while, but it's not the norm.
I love everything that you just said, Florence. And I think to also build on that is that it's also really important for us to step back and take a look at how the structure of agriculture has changed over the last 50 years. You know, it's most farms are no longer just these very small idealized family farms, right? But many times the size of farms has grown, right? And the type of equipment that's used on farms is much larger. And there's been a lot of demographic changes that have happened in rural communities that have actually hollowed out rural communities. So there's fewer neighbors. So what's also happened is the economic structures of what it takes to live on a farm have changed. And now there's usually at least one person who's working off the farm primarily for benefits and also additional income. So let's put that together, right? You have larger equipment that's more dangerous. You have fewer people available to watch children and to do all the household work that needs to be done as well. And that really contributes to these increasing risk of farm safety issues that can happen to kids, especially those really young kids that haven't developed the ability to make decisions that keep them safe. I think when we put that all together, it maybe helps explain why in our imagination, we're still kind of clinging to this older ideal of what is happening in our rural and farming communities and what the reality is today.
But I think at the same time, Shoshana, you alluded to it, right? Back in the 1980s, the USDA did a survey asking farm women, what would help you be a more successful business owner, entrepreneurs? I don't remember what wording they used, right? But childcare came up as one solution that would help them do that. And that hasn't really been addressed.
It's funny how those things work. So I would agree. Like as even in my profession as a veterinarian, the ability to not have to worry about the safety and quality of the care of my children makes me so much better of a vet. And so it's just odd that the distance has lasted for so long. So the next thing, and all these things are just kind of building and rolling on each other. So we'll just kind of build on what we've spoken about. The availability of quality, consistent, and affordable childcare has the potential to greatly reduce child farm injuries and fatalities, but then could greatly impact farm progress. So like we kind of talked about, these female entrepreneurs could excel if childcare was taken care of for them. What does childcare look like for the farm families you spoke to? And what were kind of the themes of the challenges for them?
So I think we saw a tremendous range of different childcare solutions that range from taking children to center-based care to care that's based within a household or a neighbor to, you know, sitters coming to the farm. And what was also really interesting that we saw, especially through the photo voice, was how creative individuals are with creating safe place spaces on the farm and how, you know, farm safety experts have spent a lot of time telling people, you know, they need to have safe places for the kids to play. And the good news is that, like, you know, farmers have really taken that to heart and are trying really hard. We saw examples of a old horse ring that was transformed into a play area because there was fencing. And that was one of the challenges, though, that the women talked about, that, you know, you can get funds to keep cows out of the stream, but you can't get any funds to create safe play areas, right? And so also this idea of how can we also find ways to better support these types of efforts was really something that important that came up. And I think when it comes to the challenges, right, it's like challenges that really face all working parents, regardless of whether you're in a rural or an urban community. But it's finding that quality childcare that aligns with your values and that you feel safe sending your child to, and that's also affordable. You know, in rural areas, we know that they are predominantly rural, tend to be childcare deserts, right? Where even before COVID-19, 3 in 5 rural communities were childcare deserts. So the issues are exacerbated. But I think it's also just important for us to remember that these are issues that affect all folks, regardless of whether they're living or farming, really, and whether they're farming in rural, urban, or suburban communities.
And I think to add to Shoshana's awesome description, we did, I had a summer research intern working this summer, helping with some of the data analysis and really looked more at the details of what childcare arrangements look like. And what we found is that during the workday, on average, people are working 3 different types of options. And so that was one of the things that we heard about was how, I think the first discussion group that we did was one woman talked about, it's like the children is like passing the baton. And that's really been an experience that a lot of people have talked about. And so that creates a whole host of challenges in terms of like this constant need to have the logistics figured out of where are the kids, who's going to look after them, and then who's getting them. And you know, and then on this day, they have this thing going on. And we also heard from some parents who talked about how they would love for their kids to be more involved in sports, more into social activities with their peers, but they will say, I don't have time to drive them. Or they will say, I don't have time to go see them play sports or be with them and see them grow. And so there was this sense of like things that people are missing out on because of, you know, all the things they have to juggle.
Thank you. I love the invisible work and the baton. And Dr. Inwood is going to be passing the baton really quickly here. So I want to get one last question in with her, and then she has to go. But then Dr. Bikut and I will continue. The next question talks about how childcare work is the invisible work that nobody really sees. And it's typically seen as women's work specifically. So how does this invisible work play into farm progress? And as more and more households have two working parents, how does the landscape change? Who is doing the work if both parents are at work?
I think one of the things that's always important to appreciate is also, you know, farm economics is super helpful and is a really great field. The one thing though about farm economics is that it really tends to focus only on the business enterprise, as focused on, you know, what's happening only in the enterprise, and treats the household as a separate entity. And in reality, the two are actually intertwined. And there's been decades of literature within rural studies. A lot of it actually was done, especially out of the 1980s farm crisis, to really demonstrate just how interlinked the farm household and the farm enterprise are. And in fact, that much of that invisible work, that unpaid care work and unpaid field work that the family does is actually completely subsidizing that farm enterprise and allows it to continue on, especially when markets are going in downturns, right? And there's, you know, all kinds of subsidies that happen from household income. So I think what we need to do is really, you know, and Florence and I have talked a lot about this, is how do we really start to reshift and expand that farm economics conversation to also include this invisible work and this household work? And if we really want family farms and we want future generations of farmers, right, how do we actually acknowledge and incorporate children into the farm economics and into the enterprise plan, and making really broader holistic plans, right? Whole farm plans that also include the family, and not just whether or not, you know, you want kids, but also like, how does that, you know, the rhythm of school and the changing needs of children as they age, right? And their ages from when they're, you know, infants to toddlers to elementary to high schoolers changes. How is that going to impact the production and marketing systems of the farm? Who is going to be doing that work? And right now we don't have language that really helps those families have those hard conversations. I will say I'm very excited that we just got funding from the SARE program, from USDA SARE, to actually help develop some of that decision-making materials. And so we're excited that that may be able to help alleviate some of that stress that families are feeling. I actually need to leave because I'm going to actually have to go help my children get ready for their first day of school tomorrow and walk the school for orientation tonight. But it's been lovely to be with you. And I'm so glad that Florence will be able to continue having this conversation with you. And thank you to you, Alyssa, and all your listeners.
Thank you so much for your time and good luck with first day of school stuff. That's an uphill battle, but thank you again. Dr. Bikut, did you have anything to add about the invisible work?
No, I think that Shoshana, you know, made a lot of important points. But at the same time, you know, we did hear, so, you know, care work is often has traditionally been done by women, right? But we did also hear about dads who want to play more of an active role into their children's life, who want to be present, but who might not be able to because there are these expectations of, you know, being the breadwinner, or there are these expectations of, you know, working more paid hours of the farm, or doing more of the work on the farm. And so I think it's also what we heard is how things are changing, right? Where there is, and I think we're having those conversations too at the national level, is not just moms who want to be involved, but it's also dads. And are they able to do it?
I'm so glad you brought up the point about dads, because I definitely miss them in my questions. And I do think as generations change, the involvement from both parents or whatever your family structure is has changed greatly. And we are making steps in the right direction. It's just some of these rural communities are slower to change than others. So thank you. I greatly appreciate you pointing that out, because that's really important for them. We're going to kind of go back a bit. And you guys recently had an article, kind of a general article in an online publication, The Conversation, that explored some myths around family childcare on farms. And one of these that you explicitly stated was that farmers, so one of the myths was that farmers don't need help with childcare because they have family help. And I know regionally where we live, that's very much a thought. And if we look at farm structure, family help works off the farm too. So there's just no one to take care of the kids. So talk a little bit about that and what you saw there.
Yeah, absolutely, Alicia. And so that goes back to the conversation that we were having a bit earlier about, you know, oh, farmers have a village. And what we heard is not everyone has a village. And also what we saw was big differences between if folks are multi-generational farmers, right, they've been farming over the years and they're multiple generations, maybe within 20-minute drive, people are really embedded in the community versus what we call first-generation farmers, right? So they are new to agriculture, or maybe they are one generation or two removed from agriculture. And as Shoshana was talking about, right, oftentimes where good land is accessible or affordable land is accessible might be away from the family. And so what we heard was like two things, right? There were people who were saying, I just don't have a village because we are in an area where we don't have friends and family. And sometimes they talked about challenges of getting to know people. And then we also talked about the folks who said, well, I do have a village, but they're not available. You know, I think Shoshana was talking about the trust piece. And the trust piece was more often when it came up, was because, for example, they would talk about their parents and their aging parents. They would say, I don't trust when my dad is on the tractor because he's losing his hearing and he's not seeing as well as he used to. And so I worry that he's not going to see the kids. Well, also what they talked about too sometimes around the trust was around farm safety. Actually, they said, I don't feel my parents are safe. I feel they're doing things that I don't agree with. Because I think we've also, what we feel is safe and not safe, I think has changed over time, right? And we can use the example of the seatbelt in cars, right? How we don't used to have seatbelts and now pretty much everyone wears them, right? Without batting an eye. But yeah, in terms of the village too, what we heard is people felt supported, maybe emotionally, but that maybe they had a parent who with a health problem who just couldn't help. And I think it was when we looked at the numbers, it was almost half who said that either their friends are too busy or that they have someone in the family has healthcare difficulties.
Yeah, I definitely see commonalities in that. Safety standards have changed. How this generation perceives safety is so much different. And we were just like engrossed in safety, I feel like, from picking an infant seat to choking hazards. It's just so different now. And then the busyness aspect. Families are so much busier than maybe they used to be. So we're going to pivot again. This is kind of all over the place and I apologize. But, and you guys have spoken about this at the beginning, but childcare is so crucial for farm business viability and the overall health of our rural communities. So talk a little bit about how your research supports this and then why it's such a difficult reality for the agricultural industry to recognize.
You know, what we heard is when we asked people about how has the arrival of children changed in terms of their off-farm job or on-farm job. So what we heard, you know, talking with women is they would say, you know, I used to have an off-farm job. I would bring in the health insurance so that the farm doesn't have to pay for it because, you know, health insurance could be $20,000 a year, depending where you live, depending on what your family looks like. And so we heard from people, we say, I can't have my off-farm job anymore. And it's also impacting how much money is coming into the farm. We also heard from people who said, I used to do a lot more work on the farm. I loved it. I really wanted to be farming. But as soon as the children arrived, something had to give. And oftentimes, too, that something had to give might be temporary, right? It might be when the children are the youngest, right, when they're very young. And then as the children get older, they get involved into the farm. But what we heard, too, from some of them is after they had maybe pulled away from the farm a little bit to look after the kid, they felt a disconnect from the farm. They felt like they don't know as much what's going on. They felt that, you know, decisions were maybe being made without them. And for some women, that had a big impact on their identity and who they are as women and who they are as women, you know, in agriculture. But we asked questions around, does having children affect your ability to get the work done? And it was, you know, over 3/4 said that yes, it does. And in some ways you could say, well, yeah, duh. But sometimes it has to be, you know, sometimes you have to ask the question and to have the data behind it. What we heard too, and some of it was anecdotal. We haven't done a formal project on it, but what we heard is that there are some people who have left farming before they intended to, because they just could not make it work between the farm business piece and the kids and maybe health problems. It was just too much. We've also heard of people who said that more often what would happen is the kinds of adjustments that they've made on the farm. And so, for example, they might say, well, we used to go to the farmer's market 5 times a week, but now we only go maybe 2 times a week. So that really impacted like how many times they would be in front of customers. We heard of dairy farmers who talk about how they would adjust their milking schedule around the kids and even try to milk less often. We've heard from people who've changed, you know, production systems to kind of work around the kids. And then they will talk about, well, you know, kind of questions about what are the long-term consequences of some of these changes? Because we know that in particular in the early years of a business, right, when you take over a business, are really important years in terms of setting the tones. We know that traditionally those are periods of growth, right, where people really want to grow their business and then stabilize it at a good level. But what we heard is that that's not necessarily happening, or, you know, or I think some people too talked about the family sacrifices, that they really focus on the farm business. They were really oriented towards growing their business, having the best possible business that they could have. But then that means they were spending less time with their spouses, their partners, with the children. They weren't going to school events. So there was the sense of like, we're missing out on something.
So I think so many people can identify with that, that they sacrifices have been made to spend more time with their children, or vice versa. Sacrifices have been made to inhibit farm progress. So I would think that, so as it's farm bill season right now, as that is being retooled, has there been any interest on a federal level in your work and trying to implement that in some agricultural supports for these farm families?
There has actually been a lot of conversation around childcare in the Farm Bill, and Farm Bureau has been part of these discussions. When Farm Bureau released their policy priorities for the Farm Bill back in January, right? For the first time, it includes the importance of supporting access to affordable and quality child. I don't remember the exact wording, but it talks about the importance of childcare in rural communities to support you know, economic viabilities of farm businesses. And then since then, Farmers Union has also included that as a priority, childcare in rural areas as a priority for their policy agenda. And then, as if that wasn't enough, I mean, those are wonderful changes, right? And it really is raising the awareness that this is really a topic that's a challenge. And from what we heard, there was the demand from members who were saying, we're struggling with childcare, something has to be done. And so in terms of the policy landscape, there is a bill that has been proposed. It's bipartisan and bicameral. So it's like Republicans, Democrats in the Senate and in the House who have introduced a bill to leverage existing USDA rural development programs to support the childcare sector. And so it's both physical and social infrastructure. So it's physical in the sense of like loan program for someone who maybe wants to do renovations in their home to run a childcare program. There is also, I think, connected to training to, you know, if people want to get the training that they want. So from what we have heard at the national level, and we've had, Shoshana and I have had a very busy spring and some extent summer in talking to a lot of people at the national level, we've heard a lot of support for that bill, because we've heard support in the sense that it is a step in the direction of doing something about childcare. And what's been interesting is we've heard that support both from agriculture as well as the childcare sector. And then since then, there's been another bill. It's also Democrats and Republicans together. And it's a bill for the Farm Bill that's specifically focused on women in agriculture. And it talks about the importance of addressing the specific needs of women. And it talks about a range of topics. So it talks, for example, about equipment that needs to fit women's bodies, right? Because so much of the equipment of the culture was designed for, average men's size, which is not a woman. It also talks about childcare, the importance of addressing childcare.
That it's so refreshing and so encouraging to see science in action, so that we can take this step from like a basic data collection to true policy that may impact everyone. Really just thank you, like from a farm family, like thank you for doing this work and making it so meaningful, and just such a great insight into what is occurring in rural homes and rural families and in rural America.
Thank you. If I can add, we actually asked farm families if they think that the USDA and farm organizations should be involved in national childcare policy discussions. And it was over 3/4 that said, yes, we want USDA. Yes, we want farm organizations. So that'd be Farm Bureau to be involved in these discussions. And from what I can tell, both have been involved in this discussion.
And so that's the wonderful part of it. I think from a hyper-local level, maybe these discussions aren't happening in our county Farm Bureau tables and things like that. But on the national level, I'm so pleased that it really is occurring. So to kind of help promote the cause very locally, how can organizations help to support a climate that makes childcare for farm families accessible and safe? And you mentioned in one of your papers, the images we present, so the advertisements. Mm-hmm. So illustrating those families maybe standing next to a tractor, like how we graphically display these things. Can you talk a little bit about how we can be better about ensuring that we're messaging right?
That's a great question. And I'm not, there are people who spend their entire day thinking about what's a good communication strategy versus what is not. But I can tell you that what we've heard is there are some young and beginning farmers chapters of Farm Bureau, and I think they were instrumental, from what I understand, they played a very important role in bringing childcare to the national level policy priorities of the Farm Bureau. So it is about those young and beginning farmers chapters to like bring it to the table and see, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about how much this is a problem. One of the things that some farm organizations have done and have invited Shoshana and I to come do is workshops around, during the annual conference, do a workshop around the kids on the farm and practical ideas. And so it's like facilitating having a space for people to talk about how do they navigate, having the kids with them during the day. And it's been like fascinating. Some of those discussion groups is people will like start engaging in conversations about what is the baby monitors they're using, like be like, oh, what brand are you using? And they have those conversations too around like, well, does that one require Wi-Fi? Because we like Wi-Fi does not work on the farm at all, or like we have terrible reception. And so having the space for like, what does that look like? Like from a practicality, because the other thing too is not everyone wants to use childcare. And the reality too is we're not gonna have the children in childcare 12 hours a day. That's not realistic, right? And so it's also like those very practical solutions of what people can do, like, because some folks have like great ideas that they can glean from their sisters or from, like other family members, but some folks are newer. What I would say is that there are resources out there that are specifically about involving children in farm tasks in a safe way. And so it talks about the different tasks, how old children should be, what they should be able to do in order to do that task safely. There is also, and so that's on the website, cultivatesafety.org. There are also resources on if someone wants to build a safe play area, how do you do it? Like, what are some of the features to think about? And, and we know that farmers are very creative and very used to like fixing things and building things. And so it's kind of like, here are some ideas that you could do on your farm, depending on the age of the kids. But yeah, I think in terms of the farm organizations, and there are different types of organizations, right? But those that have an advocacy aspect to their mission is about what do the members want, right? And bring that up. Another thing that can be done, and I think a lot of organizations already do that, is have offer childcare during conferences. And some people will take advantage of it and some won't. And it's really making it okay to talk about it. In some ways, you know, the same way that there has been a lot more conversations around mental health challenges, around how do we support each other when we might be going through hard times. I think with childcare, I think it has a lot more positive connotation to it, right? Like, to, you know, like around children, but like, how do we have that space to talk about how to make it work and the types of solutions that people want to see? And that's something that we can talk more about if you want, but I think we might be running out of time.
There's never enough time, is there? I do really appreciate how you brought up your mental health or mental health of farm families. And then in the Photo Voice paper you had written about the impacts on your mental health as an investigator in mm-hmm. that project. I'm not a sociologist by any means. I'm an animal scientist, but I liked how you gave attention to your own process and feelings in that. Can you talk a little bit more about what inspired you guys to look at that and then look further into it in your future research?
When we do research, right, we are trained and there is a lot of processes in place to make sure that our research is not going to hurt people to participate in it, right? That our research is not going to place people at risk that is different than what they would experience in their day-to-day life. But rarely do we talk about what about the safety of the researchers, physical and emotional. And it depends really on your training and on disciplines and on traditions. But it's something that in my training that hadn't been talked a whole lot about. I had certainly heard about it, right? But what ended up happening with Shoshana, we were doing these discussion groups, right? And we were doing one or two per day for 2 weeks and repeated that three times. What we were hearing is, you know, we were asking questions, you know, about people's lived realities with childcare, what they do, was the level of, as we talked about earlier, right, how vulnerable women were in sharing and really going in depth into things that are very personal. And, you know, we are humans, and it comes to a point where, you know, from the perspective of a researcher, right, the idea is you want to be neutral, you don't want to bias people into saying something over another, right? So you have to put a, I don't know if it's a front, but you have to be careful about how you react to people. I mean, you want to be human, right? You want to show care, but you know, it's not like if we were talking to a friend and be, I am so sorry to hear about this, let's talk about it, or really have more of that intimate discussion, right? That's not a space for that. And I think what we were finding, and I can't speak for Shoshana on that piece, but my sense is that we would end the discussion groups, and really, it really took a toll on our mental health. There are several times during those focus groups that I thought I was going to cry. I mean, I was so close to crying. And I think like you take people's stories with you, and you kind of reflect on it, and it gets to a point where it's like, wow. This is too much. I think what has been so wonderful about this project was working with Shoshana, and we really did, we did pretty much all of the groups together. So it was her and I and the women who would come, and we do it on Zoom, but always after we would debrief. So I think that helped a lot. But I do think, you know, we are, at the end of the day, we are human beings. We have our families. You know, we can't help but think about our own situations and feel, you know, have a sense of, I don't want to say feel bad, right? But like, you hear those stories and they're heart wrenching. And so, yeah, that's the point where we were, you know, we ended up looking in that article that you refer to about in the future, we really need to think ahead and think about what are we going to do to make sure that as much as we take care of the people who entrust us with their stories, also take care of ourselves, because we're not going to be useful if at some point we're out of service. So I think that's the gist of it.
I just can't thank you guys enough for taking on the burden of this work. So I think it truly is, it's a weight for you. So to kind of wrap up today, we'll maybe do something a little different. I like to ask our interviewees to give a challenge to our listeners. It doesn't have to be within your realm of work. It might just be something you're interested in. But is there anything you'd like our listeners to think about or do, or what would you propose to them?
I mean, I think in the spirit of what we talked about today, that if folks are finding themselves, parents of young children, older children, you know, having a hard time and feeling isolated, to talk about it, and I know it won't resolve all the problems. I'm well aware of that, but talk with their peers, talk with other farm women, other farm parents, because what they might find is that there is a community out there of people who are likely going to say, hey, that was tough as well. I do want to share a story of one farm woman. A year later, we get an email from her. I think we had sent something. We had sent an email to women who are participating last year. And this person said that after having participated in the research, she hadn't realized how much she was struggling and how much weight she was carrying with her, that she ended up going to her primary care provider and talk about NCCAB. Again, it will not solve all the problems, but the sense of like they had opened up about it, that maybe lightened up their load a little bit, I think. So I don't know the answer to the question, but it's a good question though.
I think you answered it. I think just having people know that there are other people who feel the same way provides tremendous amount of comfort and resiliency. So thank you. So Dr. Bikut, I'm so glad that you are willing to talk to us today. And I wish you the best in your research as you continue. And I can't wait to follow along on what happens within your organization and nationally. And I'm really excited. I'm really excited for the future. And I think you guys are a huge part of that. So thank you very much and have a good evening.
Yeah, and thank you so much for making the space to this, for this topic and for your fantastic questions. And and as we said earlier, I can't thank the farmers enough who participated in the study and shared. And also the ones who said thank you for doing something useful. That matters. Because the last thing we want to do is something that's not useful. So yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Have a good night.
To learn more about rural childcare in Kansas, check out the winter issue of Kansas Living Magazine, which will hit mailboxes of Kansas Farm Bureau members in early November.